Welcome to the Teach and Tell podcast. I'm your host, Mike Raymer, Executive Director of the Georgia Council on Economic Education, an organization whose mission is to help teachers teach economics and personal finance. Come along as we spend time with some great teachers to learn more about what it's really like in the classroom. Today's guest is John Krugel. John, tell us a little bit more about yourself and your teaching career.
So I am the director of the JMU Center for Economic Education, but I graduated from Purdue in 2001-ish degree in social studies education. So at Purdue, we had to do different areas of emphasis. And so I was just kind of U.S. history, world history, government. That was kind of what I wanted to do. And then I took a class, and I don't know if you remember this guy or not, but Chris McGrew taught a class at Purdue.
I do not. I've never met Chris.
But he taught a class at Purdue. He was the associate director for the Indiana Council for Economic Education. He also worked with the Department of Ed in Indiana. And he taught an economics for educators class. And so Stephen Day, I think, was the year behind, or like a semester behind me in the class. So he taught that. And then I was like, oh, okay. You know what I mean? It was like this. Okay. I didn't realize this is what this was.
Yeah.
That was it, man. As soon as I took that class, I was like, well, it looks like I'm teaching econ now too. And so I took a couple more econ classes and then realized, oh, they're not all like Chris. Like, this is a very different vibe than what I had. So I did okay. I did better in some than others. So when I was taking class with Chris, he just mentioned that he had a guy in China that was looking for someone that would be willing to come and teach some econ to his students at his school that he owned. And he's like, we were on pace to graduate at midterm. And so he's like, you're probably not going to get a teaching job in December. You'll probably just have to substitute. And he's like, this job will pay you about the same amount, but you'll get something on your resume that's going to be way different than what other people have. And so that like stuck in the back of my mind. And then 2 years later, I reached out again and he's like, oh yeah, who are you? In my mind, I had this idea that he would remember who I was. And
sure. Plus,
why would he? Right. So I reintroduced myself and told him that I was interested in participating in, kind of at least looking into going to China to teach. And so I ended up doing that for the first like year and a half that I taught. I would go there for like a semester, which is longer than ours, obviously. The Chinese students are a little more rigorous than what we have here. And then I would come back for like a couple weeks and then go back. And so did that for the first year and a half or so, and then started teaching in Indiana and eventually got my master's, 15 years or so in. I got my master's at Delaware, and like almost right after I graduated from Delaware, I applied to be the associate director at JMU, which is Harrisonburg, Virginia. So I'd never heard of Harrison. I didn't know that there was a Harrisonburg, Virginia. But when I was applying for the job, it was funny. I saw like Bill Wood's name and I was like, that name kind of sounds familiar. And it turned out that I was using his book. He has a book on economic episodes in American history is what it's called. And I was teaching the Great Depression. I was using a little sliver of his chapter on the Great Depression in that, like that week. So I was like, oh, okay. I've got no shot. Like I saw that and I was like, oh, this is Bill Wood. Like this dude's a big deal. And then I saw Lynn's name and then I started looking her up and I was like, oh, she's got the Booker T. Washington lesson that I used when I was talking about that. Again, no shot. These people are a big deal, but I'll apply. And so I applied and they flew me out and got the job. And yeah, so I've been here for I'm in the middle of my sixth year, I think, here now. So,
okay. So, right. So what I want to talk to you about specifically is that you've got an experience kind of unique to a lot of educators, or not very unique for a lot of educators, and you've taught high school students and then sort of their next step, you're teaching at college. What's the, I guess the huge differences between teaching a high school course, teaching a college course?
So I always say it's time, right? And that cuts both ways. In high school, I had a lot more time to do like more active learning type stuff because you had them 5 days, 50 minutes. Now I've got 3 days, 50 minutes. And so when I first started teaching college, I was like, these are college students. I can flip the classroom. We'll have them read the chapter and then they'll show up and they will have read the chapter. And then we can do the activities that will reinforce the, and no, that blew up week one. That was out of the, and so So that's been kind of interesting. So I try to find, I still like, you know, obviously I want to do active learning. So I try to find ones that will hit multiple, that'll check multiple boxes, right? If I'm going to burn half a day, I need to make sure that it's going to be something that I can, hey, remember this thing that we did. And it'll apply hopefully to the foundational stuff as well as when we get deep into macro or micro. So that's kind of the negative time part at the college level and the positive time part at the secondary level. But honestly, if you flip it the other way around, like now I also have time to just sit and grade and think about my subject and what would make it better.
Yeah.
How can I teach it better? How can I reconfigure the order in which I teach it? And that's something that I never had at the high school level.
And I guess you're not invaluable. You're not doing hall duty. You're probably not coaching like all that.
No.
Prom.
No.
Planning all nope. that stuff that teachers have to do. All right.
No, I do still have, I have more meetings now because I took over the director job.
Yeah.
I have more me. I won't say more. It's funny. I have probably as many meetings, but I get paid a big bonus for doing this rather than just teachers are expected to have all these extra meetings.
Sure.
That they just kind of do. So.
Okay. What's the most rewarding part about being a teacher for you? And this could be, you know, back when you're in high school or now when you're teaching mm-hmm. college.
I'd say either way. It's whenever you, whether it was in high school or college, in both arenas, lack of a better word, it's when you get a student who either doesn't like the subject or feels like they don't understand whatever it is you're teaching. And then you get that aha moment, right? Where like you either turned them to where maybe they don't love econ, but they at least are okay with it, right?
Yeah.
Or they really didn't understand like the indifference curve or whatever, right? And now they're like, oh, okay, now I get it, right? And so whenever you get that, it feels like, okay, especially as frustrating as it can be, like when it's a student who just really is not getting it, and then they do, it's like, okay, now we've crossed it. And that to me is like, you know, when I first start, so this is a bit of a tangent, so I apologize, but when I was at Purdue, I helped pay for college by working on the on the lighting crew. So we did a lot of electrical work, right? I always knew when I did a job that worked because you could flip the switch, mm-hmm. right? And you could literally see the light go off. And so with education, oftentimes you don't get that immediate feedback, right? You got to wait 10 years and they come back maybe and tell you about it. But like when you get those little like, ah, they got it, you know, like that's as close as I've gotten to kind of the immediate satisfaction of knowing that I put in the ballast correctly or whatever. The dimmer switch didn't get messed up when I put it on.
Yeah. And when you can see it in like real time, that's the best. When yeah. we can see the tumblers click together and like, it's the aha moment. You're right. Well, about some challenges, like the greatest challenge of teaching in general. And again, like you mentioned a little bit a second ago about you assumed that if you had a flipped classroom, kids would come in college and read it. Yeah. So are there any challenges that are unique to college versus high school or vice versa?
Challenges to college are that they, so it's, again, just a false preconception that I had was like, these students all want to be here. You know what I mean? Like they're paying to be here. They have chosen JMU, right? As opposed to, you know, my high school students, like I had students that did not want to, like clearly did not want to be there, right? I had everything from like, and I was a coach, but I even had athletes that I coached that were like, listen, man, I am here so that I can go to Indiana State and play football, right?
Yeah.
I don't care about this class. You know, you're a nice guy, but please don't ask me to do stuff. You know, and so I just assumed I wouldn't have that. But man, the apathy is still there. Like, and I was just surprised by that. And I tell them, I'm like, you don't have to be here. Like you can leave. Like there is no law that says you should be mm-hmm. here. Like if you, and that's like day one stuff where we talk about opportunity cost and decision-making and how economics is really just about choices. But yeah, like, so I, you know, by week two or three, I get kind of buy-in because they realize I'm not going to give up on the like, no, I said you can't have your laptops out. Please pay attention. You know, like that's just been, it's not been difficult. It was just surprising, I think, more than because like I think I've been able to, for the most part, I'm sure there are some that I haven't, but like for the most part, I've been able to break through and kind of shake up the apathy a little bit. But that was surprising, the level of apathy that some college students have.
What class sizes are you looking at in college?
So, I mean, we're not doing the happy hundreds at JMU. We've given some talk to like putting in 200 kids, 300 kids in a class. Cool. But I only teach, I say only, but I only teach 60-ish, 65 tops most. Right now, because I'm doing macro again this semester. So at JMU, we do it kind of weird. We do macro first semester, micro second semester for the most part. And so I'm teaching the second semester of macro, which is like a mix of students who didn't pass it the first time around or didn't get the threshold that, I don't want to say failed, but they didn't get the threshold you're supposed to get at JMU to continue with college business. And so you need to get like a B minus average. And so those kids that didn't get that, or maybe are just taking it on a lark. So my numbers are around 55 this semester, as opposed to the usual 60 to 65.
Okay. Do you ever get the same kids twice? Like, are you teaching in the fall and then the kid didn't make that threshold?
Yeah. So I have
that's
two
awkward, isn't it?
That it is. And I told them, like, one of them was like, hey, I'll see you next semester. And I was like, listen, man, like, maybe you want to try something, like, maybe my style is not your fit. And he brought up a good point. He said, Professor, this is my first semester. And I said, yeah. And he said, you always said that, like, because I say it throughout the semester, like, that we are not ready for college in our first semester. I tell them about how I did awful my first, like, I was a kid in high school where I could just kind of show up and take the test. I didn't do a lot of homework because I was lazy. I just was lazy. But I still got by. You know what I mean? I got good enough grades, my test grades. I got good enough test grades to where when I applied to Purdue, they accepted me, but they made me take a study skills class.
They knew.
Because my SAT score was too high for my GPA.
Yeah.
And my, like, they started digging into it. They're like, you need to. And I took that class. It was like a 9-week class or whatever. And I looked around and I was like, oh, goodness. Like, I saw some of the other people that were in there and I was like, I got to get shaped up a little bit.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I tell them about that. And he said, that's what was going on with me. He said, I just was not ready. And honestly, he's killing it this semester.
Nice.
And so, it was a little, the first couple of days, I was like, I don't know if this is going to work. And he's been great. I have a girl who, same deal. I mean, I think a lot of them are just, they take it their first semester. They're not ready. And macro, in my opinion, macro is harder to understand than micro, because micro is very quantitative. You can, like, let's do the math. Yep. And you can see clearly here's the cutoff point, that kind of stuff. Micro or macro, it's more like, well, you know, there's all this other stuff that's happening that could be affecting it. And students are just like, what? Like, what do you mean? So I think that's a maybe a part of it for those students, but I don't know.
All right. I remember I taught a semester. Usually I wouldn't get the same kids twice, but I taught second semester econ, and a student did not pass my class, and I taught summer school. So he comes rolling in the first day of summer school and spotted me, and he's just like, oh, God. It's like, hey, man. Yeah, he made it through summer school, though, to his credit, which is good. Another follow-up question to this is, you're talking about sort of, you know, the challenges. If you could make a change to education or changes, what would they be? How would you change it?
I mean, seeing how it's like on this side versus just like post-secondary versus secondary, like the value that is added with prep time is just immense, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a concern. You have taxpayer dollars at play when you're talking about K-12 education. And so you don't want the, I don't know, image of teachers getting a lot of time to just kind of sit around. But honestly, like, the ability to sit and think and plan and prep and read about the subject, right? Like, I've got, I don't know if you can see it, it's a horrible mess, but I've got a stack of books there that I just work through, like a chapter on this topic that I want to, you know, you read a chapter so you can do one, like, bit of a lecture, right? And I have that ability to do that now that I didn't have at the K-12 level, or at least, you know, between coaching and all the other stuff, like, yeah, maybe I could have, but I also have a family, right? And I remember I coached football and wrestling, which are back-to-back seasons, right? And eventually my wife was like, hey, listen, I would like to see you from time to time. Because with wrestling, you've got weekends are your tourneys, right? You're gone. And then once wrestling season's over, it's time for off-season workouts for football, right? So, yeah, so I did that for a little bit. But so between all of that, it's just you don't have the time for that stuff. And if you look at a lot of the research that's being done comparing European style of education systems and what we have here, like, one of the biggest indicators they say is, like, teachers spend a lot less time in front of students and a lot more time just being able to, like, grade papers or plan, right?
Yeah.
So I think that would be a big one. And it's interesting because, like, we had a chance, right? We had a chance to change some stuff. COVID was horrible. I'm not trying to, it was awful. But, like, it was also a chance for us to reset some things. And it's funny how we just We got right back into it. As soon as we could, we got right back in it. We didn't say, what are some ways that we can change some things while we have this reset that we have an opportunity to change some stuff? We just didn't. For whatever reason, I don't know what the reasons are. I'm sure people have their own theories on what those are. But to me, that's fascinating. Like, we had a chance to say, we could do this. Because a lot of schools were saying, like, teachers, let's give you a day in the middle of the week where you can plan. And then the other days will be, you know, and so we had kind of these setups that were starting and they just kind of went away. And it's disappointing.
I've noticed my wife's a teacher and she's in a system where we live. And they have gone to a model where they do get more, like, this Friday and next Monday, she has teacher work days, like, and they just had a February break. So they're really building in more kind of 2-day work days into the calendar, which she loves. I mean, I would love it too, because I agree. Once it gets going, I think a lot of people say, oh, you teachers, you never work. You get all that time off. It's, coach wrestling and football on top of teaching and see how you like that.
I wouldn't even say that. I literally would tell, like, come on, we need subs. Let's go.
Yeah.
See if you can do it. I'll give you a week. I got in trouble once because there was a parent that was being very confrontational. I said, well, you need subs. Come on, let's go. You can do it. Mm-hmm. I'll give you my lessons. Step up. And that did not go. I had to have a lot of meetings. I found out that was when I was younger and I would blow off and I didn't realize that, like, that 30 seconds of, like, pleasure of, like, saying what I really wanted to say came with, like, 3 weeks worth of meetings and paperwork that I had to follow up on.
Yeah.
So I would say that, though, like, you know, anyone that says that, I still say it, like, hey, they need subs. Go sign up. See if you can do it.
Come walk a mile in our shoes, right?
Yeah, right.
Can you think of a single greatest favorite teaching memory that you'll, like, when you're 85 years old, you'd be still thinking about it?
So my ones are, like, when they come back. Right. When you haven't, like, I had one this last summer and I was able to take a vacation with my family, which is, again, something that I wasn't able to do when I was doing K-12 stuff financially and time wise, just didn't have the ability to. Right. And so we were on vacation. I got a message on social media and I'm not a big social media guy, like Twitter. I do Twitter just mainly for the job. But I got a message on social media from a student who I hadn't seen 10 years, maybe. And this was a student who was a great student, like amazing student, but went through some stuff, man. Like, they went through some stuff and they were a good kid. They were, high school is just awful, right? Like, high school is just a horrible time. It can grind you if you're different in any way, shape or form. And this student was very different. But I was able to kind of, there was a group of us really that kind of took her under our wing and just made sure that she had at least a safe place to go to from time to time. And so, you know, some of the football players were picking on her and that was an easy solve on my end. Cause my defensive linemen were the strongest kids on the team. And so I was just like, hey, listen, if you hear anyone say anything to her, just don't physically, like, don't get fit, but just let them know that that's not cool. And my defensive linemen, I always joke that they were big dumb animals, but they were very enlightened individuals. Like, it was amazing how these hulking people could also be like, anyway, so they helped kind of take care of that. But she reached out this last summer. It's been, like I said, a decade. And she just told me about how her life's been going and how much she appreciated kind of that she was able to have at least a little bit of a normal high school setup. But, like, she was the kind of kid. So we were our colors were like purple, right? Just like JMU. So it's purple Bulldogs, just like JMU. So it was kind of a nice fit. But so we would have, like, you know, the week where, not Pep Session, but it ends in the Pep Session, Spirit Week. Jeez. Yeah. So we'd have Spirit Week and, like, there would always be a purple day, right? You'd have to dress in purple. One day, Mike, she made a Prince outfit, like the crush velvet with the frilly.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, full on with, like, the guitar, the crazy looking guitar that he had. She had all of it. Like, the guitar was cardboard, but, like, she had it all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she had the hair, everything. And she just was, and I was just like, this is amazing. Like, and so, like, that was the kind of kid she was, right? But because she would do stuff, you know, she was an easy target in some,
different.
Some
ways. Right? Yeah, you can't be different in high school.
Yeah. And so she just reached out and talked to me about that. And I've had some other students that were, because I wasn't the guy. Like, I wasn't very, I don't know. I don't have a very approachable, I have a very unapproachable face, right? I'm always kind of scowling. I don't intend to scowl. But you can even see, like, there's a line right there, because I just always scowl. Like, it's just my resting face, right?
Sure.
And so, you know, a lot of those students that were, like, kind of picked on, right? I was able to kind of take them, and, you know, it took some convincing on my part that, like, hey, I'm not going to be a jerk. But, you know, we had TAs that we would have, and so I just have them be my TA, and they'd come hang with me for a class, and just kind of get a safe place to just kind of be, right? And so it's been nice to hear back from them from time to time. And so, yeah. And it even like, it's weird how those things can happen, right? Like I got a note in my mailbox at JMU, anonymous, just someone, hey, Professor Krugel, keep killing it. Thank you so much for what you do. And it's like, it's weird. Like I like to say that I don't do it for that, but it's nice. It gives you a little shot,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, you need it too. Going. Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned Spirit Week a couple minutes ago. Yeah. I always call it Spirit Week, where education goes to die.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You knew that week, like as a rookie teacher, like I'm going to give a test now. You probably shouldn't give a test during Spirit Week. Like not much is going to happen that week when you have a kid in your room dressed like Prince.
Yeah. Can I tell you a complete sidebar for Spirit Week though? My first year teaching, I was, of course, put in charge of student council, right? Like no one wanted it. It had all sorts of outside responsibilities. Well, one of the responsibilities was, of course, Spirit Week stuff. And so I was trying to find teachers to help for something, the dance, I think. And we were doing the pep session in the gym, and there were like two levels to the gym, right? So the you know how it is, like they have the track kind of around the second. So I'm walking along the track. There are seats right here, and I'm walking because there's a teacher on the other side, right? So I'm like, that person will probably help me chaperone. So I'm walking, and as I'm walking, I see out of the corner of my eye something like movement. And so I just kind of turn, and there are people tumbling down the stage. And so I was like, oh my goodness, someone fell and they're hurt. They might be hurt. And so like, it's like slow motion. You know what I mean? So I turn, I notice I'm just registering this. And then as I'm registering this, I see people running up and jumping over like the little fence, that the railing that kind of separates the two. And I was like, what is, and it turns out that these two girls apparently had a history of just not liking each other. And we're just like pulling each other's hair, kicking as they're going tumbling.
Ooh.
And so I'm just like trying to register what is happening. Meanwhile, teachers are rushing in, trying to and like they're separating them. One's got like a clump of the other one's hair as they're getting like just nasty stuff. But sorry, so when I think of Spirit Week, sometimes that memory flashes back and it only happened once. Like that kind of stuff it only happens, you know, it's a rare thing, but it sticks in your brain.
That's called Spirited Week.
Yeah, right.
They're going at it in the stands.
We didn't have a lot of pep sessions after that for a while.
No.
For some reason.
I remember one Spirit Week, a kid came rolling into my classroom completely wrapped in cellophane, except for his nose and like mouth and eyes, like 1,000 pounds of it. Like that was his outfit. It's like, how am I going to teach this kid supply curves today? Like,
right.
He's not paying attention.
When he passes out from, from just like,
the heat of being wrapped in cellophane all day. All right. So, John, let's jump ahead a few years in your career. I don't know how many more years you have till you can retire. But when it's all said and done, when you're driving to work the last day, where you're like, this is it for me. I'm done. What's your last lesson going to be?
So I've got what I ideally would like it to be versus what it probably will actually be. Because I'm lame. It will probably just be like, okay, let's get ready for the final. Here's some of the stuff. You know what I mean? And like, just not make a big deal of it. But ideally, I would love to just roll up with like a beer and just sit back and just be like, what are they going to do? You know what I mean? Like, I guess they could take away my retirement. So maybe I shouldn't roll up with a beer. But and just sit back and just like complain about how both sides of the aisle politically are just not paying attention to economics and how like, and probably go on a rant about how free trade is good and whatever the econ topic of the day that is not being minded by politicians. Probably something with subsidies, stadium subsidies would probably be thrown in there as well. We've got a big one kind of in the works in Virginia. Probably that. It would probably be me just going on rants about almost like a Festivus style. And I've got a lot of problems with not you people, but with like, you know, the political leadership and what they've chosen to ignore when it comes to economics.
You're like, go ahead, 50 minutes. Let's solve all this right now.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
You mentioned drinking in class. So when I was getting my master's at Georgia State University, one of my professors.
This is going. I feel like this is.
So I had a professor who was nuts. I mean, he was a psychology professor. The guy was just crazy. I mean, he was just really out there, would say crazy things and just get us riled up all the time. The last day of class, some kid said, hey, can we bring like wine to class on Tuesday night? Yeah, let's do that. So the last period of the last session of that course, we got to drink in class. It was just, and he's like, yeah, it's cool, man. Like real, it's kind of, he's like a hippie sort of guy from Philadelphia. So I remember like, I'm not gonna drink once in a while, but I'm like, I guess I'll have to bring a beer because this has never happened in my life and it never happened again. So we drank in class.
There you go.
I don't know if he's still here or not. Who knows? Yeah. So, John, you probably have a long answer for this next question, as you're pretty involved with helping teachers train to be better teachers. But can you name a couple of resources that you think, let's say you're in front of, you know, 20 kids who are going to be student teaching next year, or they're going to be a first year teacher next year. What are some resources that you think they should know and have at their disposal to make them better teachers?
So there was one that I was just looking at yesterday. And I think I'm going to get it wrong. Class Magic, Classroom Magic.
Right.
It's an AI program that does all sorts of stuff. Let me pull it up actually real quick. So I want to make sure I get, but you can make a lesson plan with it. You can, I was using it because we've got a, I'm getting ready to do a workshop on how hosting the Olympics is like hosting a Taylor Swift concert, right? And kind of talking about the economics. And so I was like, I need a way to get a Taylor Swift lyric to match up with the ideas behind the Olympics and hosting the Olympics. So I was looking for a thing, and I think it's called Class Magic. Yeah, Class Magic AI is what it's called. I wanted to make sure that I got it right. And you can do all sorts of stuff with it. You can do, it'll make a lesson plan for you. You plug in the standards and it'll write up a lesson plan. You can, you can even say like, here's an article and I would like it to summarize this article into X number of paragraphs. Or you could say, here's an article, like a page one econ from the Fed, right?
Okay.
Not exactly. I mean, some of it can get pretty dense, right? Which is fine. It's the Fed. It's supposed to be accurate and all. I'm not, but you can plug those in and you can say, I want this at a ninth grade reading level, and it'll readjust it, recalibrate it to that Lexile group. I mean, you can do all sorts of stuff with it. It's an amazing site. I almost hesitated mentioning it because honestly, Mike, we might be out of a gig.
Oh, I know.
Because it's we got to find a way to make it a compliment instead of a substitute to our labor, right?
Now, like, John is referring to the fact that John is a lesson writer, and I've written a couple of lessons over the years as well. And to write a really good solid lesson, John, like how long does that take?
Start to finish. It takes a while. It depends on who's revising it for or reviewing it for you, right?
Yeah.
Like,
but I mean, potentially
there have been
it
some
months.
That I'm like, this is good. Yeah, it's a while. Like, it's a while.
And so I think you could just plug in some keys and here you go. Like, that's what a time to be alive. It's amazing.
Now, I will say this. It wasn't good. Like, it was good. It was a good start. Like, that's what I look at it as. Like, it gives you good starts, which sometimes that's all you need, right? Like, I've got an idea, but I don't really know how to. So to me as a teacher, that's like, I just can't imagine. Like, can you think about like if you had to write a difficult email to a parent? And you didn't know how to work. Now you can just pull up ChatGPT. Can you do this in this style, right?
I used ChatGPT. I did it this morning. I have to get a letter from a board member for a foundation grant we're writing. 5 seconds later, here you go. It's
like this. Grants, like being able to write the just professional tone. Can you explain this? So I think that what's crazy is like the amount of AI that's out there, right? And you know, I know at the elementary level, there are a lot of more visual, like it used to be Flipgrid, now it's Flip, right? Mm-hmm. It's a big one. That one's tough at like the secondary level, but like, it's another one of these kind of, they've evolved so much with AI. You can have all sorts of extra things in there with you and it makes it kind of creative for the students. But yeah, the classroom magic is just bonkers, man. Like there's so much. And I mean, I've only touched the surface of all the other things you can do with it. Like you can do amazing stuff with it. And to me, that's like, I've got to look more into it to the point where like, I'm trying to figure out how can we pay for it so that we have a subscription with the parameters that we have at JMU. Like, I think the foundation would let us use our money foundation account for it, but like, I want to play around with it. I want to see what we can do with it. And cause I think we can churn out some awesome stuff. And at the very least, I'd like to know what it is. Cause teachers around here are using it. Mm-hmm. And so I want to be able to know like, okay, well, what are you using? What are some of the pitfalls behind it? But yeah, it was crazy.
And it's only going to get better, right? I mean, it's probably early in its first iteration. I had an interesting lunch with a board member from, he works at Georgia Power. And we were talking about data centers that are being built in this area. One in the county that I live in, and it's massive, like just huge, huge, huge space. You drive by and it just goes forever. But he said that one data center is going to use like as much energy as like their new nuclear power plant can produce in a year, just that one center. And he said so much of it's tied to AI and the speed you need to generate all that stuff. So to me, I'm like, that's a great workshop right there, sort of bringing all those things together. Because when you think of AI, you probably don't think about the power it's sucking up and who's going to create the power and what impact will it have on your state. Maybe someday I'll have a workshop about that AI and how do you generate that power. All right, cool. So I'm going to finish with a final question I've been asking all the guests on the Teach and Tell podcast. So eventually, I don't know if it's 10 years from now or 5 years from now or next year, who knows? Hollywood's going to come knocking on your door saying, hey, we want to buy your story and tell your story about your phenomenal teaching career. Who do you, John Krugel, want to play John Krugel on the big screen?
So when I first started teaching, two things happened. And this is it sounds like I'm making this up, but like two things happened along these veins. Like my students in China would come up with little, they would have like DVDs or pictures of Andy Garcia. And they'd be like, you. Right. Or Steve, the guy from Blue's Clues, like one of those two, they would kind of come up and be like, this is you. And I was like, it's not me. I don't know. I was a little more flattered with the Andy Garcia than I was with Steve from Blue's Clues. But if I'm being honest with myself, my brother actually said when I first came stateside and started teaching was right around when School of Rock came out.
Oh.
And he's like, this is you, man. You need to be this guy. You need to be, I looked it up, Dewey Finn. You need to be Dewey Finn. And honestly, with me rocking the beard now and gaining the weight that I've got, I think Jack Black would probably be the ideal person to portray me in my somewhat frenetic way of teaching.
Yeah. Yes. Jack Black, a treasured American, just a wonder. I think he's just a wonderful person. But maybe it was in the fall. We live in a community where they film a lot of movies. There's a lot of movie studios near me. So there's movie star sightings now and then here and there. But my son was out. We have a bunch of golf cart paths through our town that everyone has golf cart drives around. But he's out on a Sunday and he sends me a picture and it's him and Jack Black. I'll send it to you when you're done. I'm like, what is this? What are you doing? He's like, I just ran into Jack Black. So he gets home and I'd been making like a giant pot of spaghetti. I'm like, dude, you should have invited him over for dinner. He's like, oh, damn it, I forgot. That would have been nice. Just if you brought him home unannounced, Jack Black. And shout out to School of Rock, one of my favorite movies ever. Just great stuff. All right. So, John, I want to thank you so much for being on this podcast. Again, I was really looking forward to getting your perspective of teaching high school students and then college students. And I know you're doing tremendous work at your university and for teachers across the country with your lesson plans. You're a regular contributor on different webinars for teachers. I think you have one coming up this week with a Conifol about
yesterday.
How did it go?
It went well.
Okay. Yeah. And I am still working on the possibility of us visiting Nike in Oregon. Hopefully that will come true. I'm still
No worries.
A former student of mine.
Want to, since you, I don't know if I actually showed. So one of the Conifol ones that I did was the Jordan one. And I told a painful childhood memory and Mike was kind enough to make a shirt about that story. So I love it. It's awesome.
To remind you of that painful memory forever.
You know what? But it came from a place of love though. That's how I choose to.
Indeed. All right, John, I appreciate your time. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for having me.
All right. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Teach and Tell podcast. Help us spread the word and promote great teachers by giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, I'm Mike Raymer, and I'm here to remind you that econ is life.